whether they're telling the truth or not. So you're going to know if I'm lying? She was looking at me entirely differently now. I wasn't a journalist anymore. I was someone she could learn from, someone who offered value. I had demonstrated authority over her world. I can tell from your eye movements, from your eye contact, from the way you speak, and from your body language. There's so many different ways to tell. I need to do psychology classes, she said with endearing earnestness. That would be so interesting to me, studying people. It was working. She was opening up. She kept talking and talking. And you could meet somebody or be out on a date and be like, are they lying to me right now? Oh my gosh. It was time to pull out the heavy artillery. I'll show you something really cool, and then we'll get back to the interview, I said, throwing in a time constraint for good measure. It'll be an experiment. I'm going to try to guess something that's in your thoughts. Then I used a simple magic trick to guess the initials of an old friend she had an emotional connection to, someone I wouldn't know and hadn't heard of. The initials were GC, and I got one letter out of two correct. It was a new routine. I was still learning, but it was good enough for her. I can't believe you did that. I probably have so many walls in front, so that's why you didn't get them both, she said. Let's try it one more time. This time, why don't you try it? I'm scared. She put her knuckle in her mouth and pinched the skin between her teeth. She had great teeth. They really were a perfect C shape. I can't do that. She was no longer Britney Spears. She was just a one set, a lone target. Or, as Robert Greene would classify her in his breakdown of Seducer's Victims, she was the lonely leader. We'll make it easier, I said. I'm going to write down a number, and it's a number between 1 and 10. What I want you to do is not to think at all. You need to trust your instincts. There's no special ability required to read minds. Just quiet your internal chatter and really listen to your feelings. I wrote a number on a piece of paper and handed it to her. Now tell me, I said, the first number that you feel. What if it's wrong, she asked. It's probably wrong. This was what we called in the field an LSE girl. She had low self-esteem. What do you think it is? 7, she said. Now turn over the paper, I told her. She slowly turned it over, as if she were afraid to look, then moved it up to eye level and saw a big number 7 staring right back at her. She screamed, leaped off the couch, and ran to the hotel mirror. Her mouth hung agape as she looked her reflection in the eye. Oh my God, she said to her reflection. I did that. It was as if she had to look at herself in the mirror to make sure that what had just happened was real. Whoa, she gasped. I did that. She was like a little girl seeing Britney Spears for the first time. She was her own fan. I just knew that it was 7. She announced as she galloped back to the couch. Of course she knew. That was the first magic trick I learned from mystery. If you have someone choose a number between 1 and 10 randomly, 70% of the time, especially if you rush their decision, that number will be 7. So, yeah, I had tricked her, but her self-esteem needed a good boost. See, I told her, you already know all the answers inside. It's just that society trains you to think too much. I really believed that. Cool interview, she exclaimed. I like this interview. This has been the best interview of my life. Then she turned her face toward mine, looked me in the eye, and asked, can we stop the tape recorder? For the next 15 minutes, we talked about spirituality and writing and our lives. She was just a lost little girl going through a late emotional puberty. She was searching for something real to hold on to, something deeper than pop fame and the sycophancy of her handlers. I had demonstrated value, and now we were moving onto the rapport phase of seduction. Maybe mystery was right. All human relationships follow the same formula. Rapport equals trust plus comfort. However, I had a job to do. I started the tape recorder and asked the questions I'd given her at the start of the interview, plus all the other questions I had. This time, she gave me real answers, answers I could print. When the hour was up, I stopped the tape recorder. You know, Brittany said, everything happens for a reason. I truly believe that, I told her. I do too. She touched my shoulder, and a broad smile spread across her face. I'd like to exchange numbers. Chapter 10. After our hour was up, Brittany left the room to change for an MTV interview. She returned 10 minutes later with her publicist. As she sat down in front of the cameras, her publicist looked at me strangely. "You know, she's never done that with a writer before," she said. "Really?" I asked. She said it was like the two of you were destined to meet. The publicist and I stood next to each other in silence as the MTV interview began. "So you had a crazy time out the other night?" the interviewer asked. "Yeah, I did," Brittany answered. "What was the energy level like in the club when you walked in and surprised everyone?" "Oh, it was just crazy." "And how much fun did you have?" Suddenly, Brittany stood up. "This isn't working," she told the crew. "I'm not feeling this." She pivoted on her heels and walked toward the door, leaving the crew and her assistants befuddled. As she passed me, the corners of her mouth turned upward, forming a conspiratorial smile. I had gotten to her. There was something deeper to Britney Spears than what the pop machine required of her. The game, I realized, works better on celebrities than ordinary people. Because stars are so sheltered and their interactions limited, a demonstration of value or the right neg holds 10 times the power. In the days that followed, I thought often about what had happened. I had no illusions. Britney Spears wasn't attracted to me. She wasn't considering me as a potential mate. But I had interested her, and that was a step in the right direction. Pickup is a linear process. Capture the imagination first, and the heart next. Interest plus attraction plus seduction equals sex. Of course, maybe this was all just self-hypnosis. For all I knew, she exchanged phone numbers with every journalist to make him feel special and ensure a good story. She probably had an answering service set up at that number, specifically for gullible writers who thought they were pickup artists. Or perhaps it was a scheme of the publicists to make journalists think they had a special connection with her artist. Maybe I was the one being sarged, not her. I would never know the truth. I stared at that number every day, but I couldn't bring myself to dial it. I told myself that it was crossing a journalistic line. If she didn't like the piece I was writing, which was quite possible, I didn't want her to go on record saying I had written a bad article because she hadn't phoned back. "Just call her," Mystery constantly prodded me. "What do you have to lose? Tell her, 'Can you not look like Britney Spears? We're going to do some crazy shit and we can't get caught. We're going to wear wigs and climb up to the Hollywood sign and touch it for good luck.' If I had met her socially, fine, but this is a work assignment." "You're playing the game at another level now," Mystery said. "When the article is finished, it isn't an assignment anymore, so call her." But I couldn't do it. If it had been Daylene Curtis, the Playmate of the Year, I would have called her back in a second. I had no fear of women like that anymore. I felt worthy. I'd proven that over and over since meeting her. But Britney Spears? One's self-esteem can only grow so much in a year and a half. Step 9. Make a physical connection. Chapter 1. It took just one woman to bring Project Hollywood down. By all appearances, Katya was a standard-issue party girl. She liked to drink, dance, get high, and have sex, not necessarily in that order. But Katya, perhaps out of innocence, perhaps out of revenge, perhaps out of true love, would outgame every pua in the house. All those years of study, all those memorized routines and learned patterns of behavior, all those new rock platform boots were no match for a woman scorned. When I returned from New York, Mystery had a workshop scheduled in Los Angeles. He was charging $1,500 now, and people were paying. He had 5 students, guaranteeing a healthy profit for a weekend of talking and sarging. Katya's was just one of several numbers he had collected while demonstrating his game during the workshop. He'd met her at a Hollywood bar called Star Shoes. She was very drunk at the time, and quite possibly high. Monday was telephone day at Project Hollywood. Everyone called the numbers they'd collected the previous weekend to see which leads were hot and which had staled. When Mystery made his calls, the only person who picked up the phone was Katya. If Katya hadn't been home, and another one of Mystery's numbers had answered instead, all our lives would have been different. Despite our supposed skill, mating is largely a game of chance. Women are at different places in their lives when we meet them. They may be looking for a boyfriend, a one-night stand, a husband, or a revenge fuck. Or they may be looking for nothing at all, because they're in a happy relationship or recovering from an emotionally destructive one. Katya was probably looking for a place to live. When Mystery called, Katya couldn't remember having met him. Nonetheless, after half an hour of talk, or comfort building, as Mystery put it, she agreed to come over. "Dress casual," Mystery told her. "I'll only be able to hang out for an hour or two." Using words like casual and hangout and the time constraint were all part of a strategy to make the visit a low-pressure event. It's a much better way to get someone to commit to time with a stranger than AFC-style dinner dating, which can be a painful, drawn-out affair that involves two people who may have nothing in common stuck together for an entire night of awkward conversation. Katya arrived that evening wearing a pink sweatsuit and dragging along a scrappy little terrier named Lily. Both Katya and Lily instantly made themselves at home. The former collapsed into the pillow pit, and the latter took a shit on the carpet. Mystery popped out of his room in jeans, a long-sleeved black t-shirt, and his hair in a ponytail. "I'm just gonna hook my computer up to the projector and show you some movies I made," he told her. "No worries, no troubles," Katya replied in an upbeat Russian accent. She had a button nose that wiggled, puffy cheeks that flared, and blonde hair that bounced to maximize her cuteness. Mystery dimmed the lights and showed her our home movies. They were becoming a popular routine around the house because they allowed us to convey positive qualities about ourselves and our friends without even talking. After movie time, Mystery and Katya massaged each other and made out. On their second meeting, 3 days later, after much LMR, PUA jargon for last-minute resistance, they closed the deal. "I'm moving out of my apartment," she told Mystery afterward. "So is it okay if Lily stays here while I go to Las Vegas this weekend?" Leaving Lily at the house was a cunning tactic, because while Katya was gone, we all grew attached to the cheery, lovable dog, and by extension, to its owner as well. Their personalities were similar. They were both bouncy and energetic, and liked licking Mystery's face. When Katya returned from Las Vegas, Mystery helped her move out of her old house. "I think it's completely ridiculous for you to rent a new apartment, knowing that you'll be spending most of your time with me," he told her. "So why don't you just move into my room?" All she had to her name were two duffel bags, a makeup kit, Lily, and a Mazda SUV stuffed with clothing and shoes. As far as anyone knew, she had no job or source of income, though she'd modeled for a couple of low-budget swimsuit calendars. In the evenings, she went to school to learn special effects makeup. Every night after class, she'd prance around the house with fake rope burns around her neck, or artificial brain spilling out of a flesh wound in her forehead, or the wrinkles and liver spots of a 90-year-old woman. Katya quickly wove herself into the fabric of the house. She volunteered to be a pivot for Papa's workshops. She put eyeliner on Herbal before he went out for the night. She cleaned the kitchen that we were all too lazy to deal with ourselves. She went clothes shopping with Xanius, and she played hostess to Playboy's parties. She had an amazing ability to befriend anyone, though her motivation was unclear. Maybe she was genuinely a people-loving person, maybe she enjoyed the free rent. Either way, she was giving the home its first rays of warmth and camaraderie since the night we'd moved in and sat in the jacuzzi, dreaming of the future together. I liked her. We all liked her. We even let her brother, a shaggy-haired 16-year-old with Tourette's syndrome, sleep in the pillow pit for a few weeks. Mystery was particularly happy with himself. He hadn't dated anyone seriously since Patricia. "I actually have a crush on my own girlfriend," he said with pride one evening, showing Katya's swimsuit calendar picture to a group of random sergers. "I think of her constantly, like when you have a baby. I have a very strong nurturing instinct. I need to take care of this girl and make sure she's safe." Later that night, as Herbal cooked steak on the barbecue, Katya and I sat in the jacuzzi, sharing a bottle of wine. "I'm really scared," she said. "Why?" I asked, though I really knew why. "I'm starting to fall in love with Mystery." "Well, he's a talented and amazing guy." "Yeah," she said. "I never let myself fall in love like this. I don't know enough about him yet. I'm worried." Then she sat there quietly. She wanted me to say something, to warn her if she was making a mistake. I didn't say anything. A few days later, Mystery and Katya flew to Las Vegas. Katya called me soon after they arrived. "Hey, is something wrong?" I asked her. "No, Mystery wants to marry me. He got down on his knees at the Hard Rock Pool and proposed. Everyone applauded. It was so sweet. What should I do?" Mystery grabbed the phone. "Hey, man, you're gonna get really mad at me. We're getting married. I love this girl. She's crazy. We're on our way to the chapel. Okay, bye." The guy was an idiot. That evening, Mystery carried Katya over the threshold of Project Hollywood, humming Here Comes the Bride. They'd known each other for 3 weeks. "Look at my ring," Katya cooed. "Isn't it beautiful?" "Our rings cost $8,000, Mystery said with pride. That was basically all the cash he had. Though he was raking in money from his workshops, he was a fan of man toys. Computers, digital cameras, electronic organizers, basically anything with a chip. "This whole marriage thing," Mystery told me while Katya was in the bathroom, "is the best routine ever. She loves me now. She gets off on calling me her husband. It's like a time distortion." "Dude, it's the worst routine ever," I replied, "because you can only do it once." Mystery took a step toward me and removed his ring. "I'm going to tell you a secret," he whispered, putting the ring in my hand. "We're not really married." If any other Pua had told me he'd gotten married in Vegas to a girl he'd just met, I would have known it was a joke. But Mystery was so headstrong and unpredictable that I had given him the benefit, or more accurately, the detriment, of the doubt. "Don't tell Katya I told you," Mystery continued. "I think she's really enjoying the role play. On an emotional level, it's the same as really being married for her." Mystery was right. Perception is reality. In the days that followed, their entire relationship changed. They actually started acting like an old married couple. Now that he was living with a woman, Mystery didn't feel the need to go out anymore. To him, clubs were for sarging. To Katya, though, they were for dancing. So she started going clubbing without him. After a while, Mystery hardly left his room, or for that matter, his bed. It was hard to tell whether he was just being lazy or if a depression was coming on. There's a pattern the pickup artists have called rocks versus gold. It's a speech a man gives a woman he's dating when she stops having sex with him. He tells her that women in a relationship want rocks, or diamonds, while men seek gold. Rocks, for a woman, are nice dinners, romantic attention, and emotional connection. Gold, for a man, is sex. If you give a woman gold or a man rocks, neither will be satisfied. There must be an exchange. And Katya was giving Mystery the gold, but he wasn't giving her the rocks. He wasn't taking her out at all. It wasn't long before they began to resent each other. He'd say, "She gets drunk every night. It's driving me crazy." She'd say, "When I met him, he had all these plans and ambitions. Now he never leaves his bed. What's the point?" He'd say, "She never shuts up. She's constantly yapping about something pointless and bouncing off the walls." She'd say, "I'm getting wasted every night because I don't want to be in a reality that's so sad." Mystery needed a more passive girl. Katya needed a more active man. And it saddened the rest of us. After living in a house full of men for so many months, we'd grown attached to her positive energy and high spirits. Mystery had taught himself everything there was to know about pickup, but nothing about how to maintain a relationship. He had this beautiful creature, full of sparkle and life, and he was just throwing it away. Soon, another woman, with a very different kind of sparkle, would move into Project Hollywood. I received the text message at 11:39 p.m. "Can I stay at your house?" "They repoed the car and worse. You don't want to know. Need to not be alone." It was Courtney Love. Chapter 2. I knocked on the door of Courtney's corporate apartment in West Los Angeles. "Come in, it's open." Courtney sat on the floor in the middle of a sea of American Express bills and bank statements with a yellow highlighter in her hand. She wore a black Marc Jacobs dress with buttons running down the side. One was missing. "I can't look at these anymore," she moaned. "There are so many loans here that I never knew of or approved." She stood up and slammed an American Express bill on the table. Half the items were highlighted, with notes in black ink scribbled in the margins. "If I stay here, I'll do drugs again," she cried. She didn't have a manager, and taking care of her own affairs was proving to be more than she could handle. "I don't want to be alone," she begged. "I need somewhere to stay for a couple days. Then I'll be out of your hair. I promise." "That's fine." I guess she didn't have a problem with the story I'd written in Rolling Stone. "Herbal said you could sleep in his room. I just want to warn you, though, that you're not going into an ordinary house." "I know. I want to meet the pickup artists. Maybe they can help me." I walked her downstairs and strapped her 60-pound suitcase to the luggage rack on the back of my Corvette. "You should also know that Koch's brother is staying with us," I said. "And if he seems a little off, it's because he has Tourette's. Is that like when you yell shitballs uncontrollably? Yeah, it's sort of like that. I parked in the garage and dragged her suitcase upstairs to the house. The first person we saw inside was Herbal, who was coming out of the kitchen. "Hi, shitballs," Courtney said to him. "No," I told her, "that's not Katya's brother." Her brother walked out of the kitchen a moment later, sipping a Coke. "Hi, shitballs," Courtney said to him. She took a step backward and stepped on Lily, who yelped loudly. Courtney turned around. I assumed she was going to apologize. "Fuck off," she told the dog. This was going to be an interesting couple of days. I showed her around the house and then bid her goodnight. 2 minutes later, she marched into my room. "I need a toothbrush," she said as she breezed through to my bathroom. "There's a clean one in the medicine cabinet," I yelled after her. "This'll do," she snapped back, grabbing my gnarly used toothbrush off the sink. There was something endearing about her. She possessed a trait nearly every pickup artist desired but lacked. She just didn't give a fuck. The next morning, I came downstairs to find her in the living room, smoking a cigarette and wearing nothing but a pair of expensive Japanese silk panties. Her body was covered with black marks, as if she'd been rolling around in charcoal. In that state of dishabille, she met the rest of the house. "I used to ride horses with your dad," Papa told her when I introduced them. Courtney scowled. "If you call that man my father again, I'll punch you in the face." She wasn't trying to be mean. She just lived in and reacted to the moment. But Papa didn't take well to aggression. All Papa had wanted, from the day he'd signed the lease to Project Hollywood, was to hang out with celebrities. But now that he was living with one, in fact, the most notorious woman in the country at the time, he was petrified of her. He avoided her from that day forward, like he did everyone else who wasn't part of his pickup business. Next, Courtney met Katya. "I just took a pregnancy test," Katya told her, puckering her lips into a childish expression of self-pity. "It came out positive." "You should have the baby," Courtney said. "It's the most beautiful thing in the world." I was living the surreal life. Chapter 3. Mystery kneeled in front of Katya and kissed her belly. "If you want to keep the baby, whether we are together forever or not, I will support your decision. It would be a beautiful baby." The sun poured into the kitchen from the patio, illuminating a thin, orderly chain of ants that ran from the brickwork outside to the overflowing trash can inside. Before he stood up, Mystery licked his finger and wiped a thin stripe of saliva through the middle of the chain. The ants went scurrying in every direction at the point of rupture. "I can't even believe you'd think of keeping the baby," Katya replied, her voice chirpy but scornful. "You're weird. You're acting like we're really married." The ants began to fall back into line. Soon order was restored. It was hard to tell there had ever been a catastrophe. "I love you," Mystery said without emotion. "And you know my mission in life, survive and replicate. So I don't see any harm in having the baby. I'm willing to fulfill my half of the obligation." Our house wasn't self-organizing like a line of ants. There was no chain of command or unspoken structure. The invisible chemical path we were all following smelled like male hormones, and its natural state was disorder. All afternoon, Mystery and Katya fought with each other over whether she should have an abortion and who should pay for it. These matters, however, are not group decisions. So Katya and Mystery went to an abortion clinic 3 days later. "Guess what?" Katya squealed when she returned. "I'm not pregnant." She jumped into the air and clapped her hands together in praise of luck. Mystery stood behind her, giving her the finger. The look on his face was pure hatred. I'd never seen him display such malevolence toward a woman before. A few hours later, I found Katya at the bar pouring herself a glass of Chardonnay. Then another, then another. "Mystery doesn't come out of the room, and he doesn't fuck," she complained. "So I'm going to have a good time tonight without him." "You deserve it." "Come drink with me," she cooed. "That's all right. No worries, no troubles." She took a slow sip of wine and sat next to me on the couch. "Wow," she said. "You really have been working out. Your arms look good." "Thanks." One of the things I'd learned in the past year and a half was how to take a compliment. Just say, "thank you." It's the only response a confident person can make. She sidled up to me and squeezed my biceps. "You're the only person in the house I can talk to." Her face was inches away from mine. I felt that tingle of energy, the one I'd felt just before I kissed the hostess Tyler Durden had picked up at the Hard Rock. "Look at this," she said. She was lifting her top now. "I got a scratch." "That's nice. Here, feel it." She took my hand and pulled it toward her breast. I really had to get going. "Well, it's been fun talking, but I have to go to my room and floss my cat." "But you don't have a cat," she whined. I circled around to the back of the house and entered Mystery's room through the patio. He was lying on top of his bed, in jeans, with a laptop computer resting on his bare stomach. He was watching Back to the Future, too. "When I was in 10th grade, I wanted to kill myself because I had nothing left to live for," he said. "Then I heard that Back to the Future 2 was opening in 23 days. I had a calendar, and I would mark off each day until I could see the movie. It's the only thing that kept me from killing myself." He paused the movie and lifted the laptop off his stomach. "When I saw it and heard the opening music, I cried, dude. It was my reason to live. I know all the props." He held up the DVD box and showed me the cover. I touched this car. I sat down at the foot of his bed. No one wants to be the bearer of bad news. I picked up the DVD box and looked at it. Mystery liked movies like Real Genius and Young Einstein and The Karate Kid. I liked Werner Herzog, Lars von Trier, and Pixar. It didn't mean I was better than him. It just meant we were different kinds of nerds. "Dude," I told him, "your wife is hitting on me." "I'm not surprised. She hit on Playboy earlier tonight." "Aren't you going to do anything about it?" "I don't care. She can do what she wants." "Well, at least she's not pregnant." "Get this," he said. "She's such an idiot. That wasn't a pregnancy test at all. It was an ovulation test. She bought the wrong box at Rite Aid. She took the test 3 times, and each one was positive. So all she discovered was that at 23, she's still ovulating." "Listen, man." I noticed there were scratches on his arm. "You're driving her away. If she's hitting on everyone in the house, it's only because she's trying to get revenge on you. It's rocks versus gold, man. You haven't been giving her rocks." "Yeah, she's a brainless alcoholic." He paused, shut his eyes for a moment, and nodded wistfully. "But that body, her ass is a 10. When I left Mystery's room, Katya was no longer in the living room. Papa's door was open, and she was cuddled next to him on the bed, with her top off. I retreated to my room and waited. An hour later, the storm came. Voices yelled, doors slammed, glass smashed. There was a knock on the door. It was Courtney. "Are your roommates always this loud?" She was one to talk. I followed Courtney to Herbal's room. Herbal had been sleeping in the pillow pit while Courtney commandeered his room. Clothes, books, and cigarette ash were spread across the floor. A candle sat burning at the foot of the bed, its flame licking just an inch below the comforter. One of her dresses was draped over a hot, exposed light bulb for mood lighting, and all 4 of the house phone books were spread across her bed, with pages torn out of each. I examined the ripped scraps. They were listings for lawyers. The noises coming from Mystery's room grew louder. "Let's see what's going on," she said. I didn't want to be involved. I didn't want to clean up anyone's mess. This wasn't my fucking responsibility. We walked into Mystery's bathroom. Katya was kneeling on the floor with her hands clasped around her neck as if she were choking. Her brother was leaning over her, holding an asthma inhaler in her mouth. Mystery stood a few feet away, staring daggers at Katya. "Should I call an ambulance?" I asked. "They'll arrest her because she has drugs in her system," Mystery said contemptuously. Katya looked up and glared at him. If she had the presence of mind to glare at Mystery, then she clearly wasn't dying. When Katya finally emerged from Mystery's room, her face red and damp, Courtney took her by the hand and led her to a sofa in the living room. She sat down next to her, still gripping her hand, and told her about the abortion she had been through and about the beauty of childbirth. I looked at the unlikely pair sitting there. Courtney was both Project Hollywood's child and its mother. She was also probably the sanest person in the house, and that was a scary thought. Chapter 4. The next morning, Courtney burst out of her door at an atypically early hour. She was wearing an Agent Provocateur nightie.
"What? What's going on?" she asked, rubbing the sleep out of her eyes.
"I had a bad dream. I didn't know where I was." She looked around. At me, at Katya sleeping on the sofa, at Katya's brother and Herbal snoring inches apart in the pillow pit. "Everyone's nice," she observed with relief.
No one's mean. Okay. She returned to her room and shut her door. A few minutes later, a driver arrived at the house. Where's Courtney? He asked. Sleeping, I said. She's got a court date in an hour. He knocked on her door and walked inside. Shortly afterward, a slew of dresses came tumbling out of Courtney's room, followed by their owner. I need to find something to wear to court, she said as she slipped on various outfits, running in and out of the bathroom to check them in the mirror. Eventually, she left the house in a strapless black cocktail dress of Katya's, Herbal's $8 sunglasses, and Robert Greene's The 48 Laws of Power book tucked under her arm. It's a silly dress because it's a silly case, she told court reporters that day. While she was gone, we inspected the damage. There were cigarette burns in Herbal's bedspread, and the wall behind the door was destroyed from the constant slamming. There were slicks of unidentifiable liquid on the floor, candles still burning, and clothing flung over every light fixture. In the kitchen, the refrigerator and cabinet doors all hung open. Two peanut butter jars and a jelly jar sat on the countertop, with their caps scattered on the floor. Globs of peanut butter dripped from the counter, the cabinets, and the refrigerator shelves. Rather than open bags of bread using the twist tie on the end, she had torn the tops of the plastic bags open like an animal. She didn't give a fuck. She was hungry. She ate. It was another quality that pickup artists admired. She could go caveman. When Courtney returned from court, she sat with the house's cabal of pickup artists and planned her appearance that evening on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. Mystery and Herbal taught her about concepts like social proof and NLP ideas like framing. She needed to be reframed. The current frame everyone saw her through was that of a crazy woman. But having lived with her for 2 weeks, we knew she was just going through a bad period. She was eccentric, but not crazy. In fact, she was incredibly smart. She understood and internalized every concept they taught her. So my new frame, then, is that I'm a damsel in distress, she said. That evening, she shone on The Tonight Show. Unlike during her tabloid headline-making Letterman appearance, she was composed and well-behaved on camera, and her performance with her all-female band, The Chelsea, was a reminder that she wasn't just a celebrity, she was a rock star. I had driven to the show in Katya's car with Herbal, Mystery, Katya, and Kara, a girl I'd met in a bar a couple days before. After the show, we went upstairs to Courtney's dressing room, where she was sitting on a stool, surrounded by The Chelsea. I was stunned by her guitarist. She was a tall, gorgeous, bleach blonde rock and roller, oozing attitude. Why couldn't I ever find girls like that in the clubs? Can I stay in your room for 2 more weeks? Courtney asked Herbal. Sure, he replied. Herbal never had a problem with anything or anyone. While Mystery had been moping in his room, he was out helping Katya keep her brother entertained. It may be a month, Courtney called after us as we left the room. Chapter 5. It was bound to happen. Katya eventually reached someone in the house. She'd been hitting on all of us since her pregnancy scare. It was Herbal who ultimately cracked. He was laid back. He never lost his cool. He liked to listen. He was modest and understated. In other words, he was the exact opposite of Mystery. All that time he had spent with Katya, while Mystery was pouting or laying indolently in bed or sleeping with a stripper out of revenge, had affected him. He had developed feelings for Katya. After watching her suffer through Mystery's manipulation and neglect, he'd even begun to believe that he was more worthy of her. It's just getting harder and harder to say no, he told me. Just ask Mystery, he's probably over her by now. Yeah, after all, he was cool with the whole Sima thing. Sima was Mystery's ex-MLTR from Toronto, who Herbal had fooled around with. So Herbal asked Mystery. The answer was no. But that evening, after fighting with Katya again, Mystery found Herbal in the living room. We're broken up, he said casually. She's all yours. They were words he would soon regret. Within hours, Herbal had his dick inside her. Since Courtney was sleeping in his bed, he fucked her in Playboy's room off the kitchen. When Mystery returned that night from the Standard, he went to the kitchen for a Sprite. That was when he heard them. The moans that had been his exclusive nightly serenade were being sung for another man. He stood outside Playboy's door in shock, listening to them have sex. Katya seemed to be enjoying it. Loudly. Mystery walked into the living room and collapsed on the floor. The blood drained from his face. Like his father's death, it affected him more than he could have predicted. Never underestimate your own capacity to care. I love her, he said, as the first tear trickled down his cheek. I love that girl. No, you don't, I corrected him. You said the other day that you hated her. The thoughts I'd been holding back for weeks came pouring out of me. All you like about her is her body. The only reason you're upset is because you feel rejected. No, I'm pissed at her for not loving me back. She loved you more than any other girl I've seen you with. She sat with me in the hot tub one night, talking about how scared she was to let go and really love you. And as soon as she did, you became a cold, shut-down, miserable bastard. But I love her. You say that about every girl you sleep with. That's not real love. It's fake love. It's an illusion. No, it isn't, he screamed at the top of his lungs. You're wrong. He stood up, stomped to his room, and slammed the door, splintering paint onto the carpet. He'd been so neglected as a child that the withdrawal of love pulled all his emotional triggers, exploding the carapace of narcissism built by his childhood escapism. As I walked back to my room, a scene from The Wizard of Oz sprung into my head, in which the wizard tells the Tin Man, "A heart is not judged by how much you love, but by how much you are loved by others." I was looking forward to letting my dreams file away all my thoughts, worries, and aggravations so I could start the next day fresh. But I was waylaid by Courtney. She stood in my doorway, a sheaf of papers in her hand. "You gotta get Frank Abnegale on the phone for me," she demanded. "He can fix this. And call Lisa and tell her I need to see her." "You got it." I had no idea what she was talking about. I didn't know how to get in touch with Frank Abnegale, the counterfeit artist whose memoirs inspired the movie Catch Me If You Can, or, for that matter, Lisa, her guitarist. But by now, I'd figured out how to deal with Courtney's constant demands. Just say yes and do nothing. She'd forget what she wanted in a few hours anyway. In the morning, I checked on Mystery. He was sitting on his bed in his robe, shaking and convulsing. His face was red, and his eyes were full of tears. I'd never seen him like this before. When he was depressed in Toronto, he'd simply shut down and become catatonic. This time, he seemed to be in real pain. "I want to kill her." He rolled onto his back and moaned like a dying dog. "Logically, I know I'm being controlled by my emotions. But my logic is just 2% right now. I feel emotionally raw." He clenched his bedsheet in his fist. "I feel strange and empty, like after a shit." He rolled over and started sobbing again. "I feel shit empty." I would have laughed if he were trying to be funny. As he grieved, I kept thinking of one of Courtney Love's lyrics. "I made my bed, I'll lie in it." Mystery had made his bed, and now Herbal was lying in it. He raised his hands to the ceiling and screamed in his Anthony Robbins voice. Suddenly, Courtney poked her head in the door. "Is it about me? I can sleep in the front room if you want." She could be so sweet. I walked into the living room and told Courtney what was going on. Katya was sitting on the patio outside, smoking a cigarette and crying. Herbal shuffled to the table with his head slumped forward. He was silent, trying to think of something to say. Neither of them seemed to regret sleeping together. They just didn't realize that Mystery would take it so hard. None of us did. Courtney lit a cigarette and told Herbal about a threesome she'd experienced and how sharing can be caring. Just then, Herbal's phone rang. He answered it and, with a shocked expression on his face, handed it to Courtney. "It's Frank Abnegale calling for you," he said. "I guess he got my message." I left the three of them on the patio and called Mystery's sister, Martina. "He's starting to crash again," I said. "How bad is it?" "It started off like normal heartbreak, but this morning he went over the edge. The situation seems to have triggered some kind of chemical reaction. He's crying uncontrollably right now. Well, if it gets any worse, I'll get him a ticket back to Toronto. If you can put him on a plane, we'll take care of him when he arrives. You realize that if he comes back to Toronto, everything will be lost. He's overstayed his visa here, so they'll never let him into the United States again. He'll have no chance of becoming a famous illusionist. And his pickup business will be destroyed." "I realize that, but what choice do we have?" she said. "I'll try to handle it myself." "Just send him home. Healthcare in Canada is free. We can't afford to take him anywhere in the States, especially if they institutionalize him. Let me try. If it gets worse, I'll send him back to you." Watching Mystery's relationship with Katya unfold had been an eye-opener. He invited her to move in. He married her. He got her not pregnant. He ignored her and resented her. He gave Herbal permission to sleep with her. He was no one's victim but his own. In the meantime, ever since the New York Times article, half a dozen reality TV executives had called Mystery, including the producers of American Idol. VH1 had even sent him a contract for a show in which he turned losers into Lotharios. The stardom Mystery wanted so desperately was his for the taking, but he wasn't calling anyone back. "This has happened before," Martina sighed when I told her about the reality show offers. "Every time he gets close to making it, he breaks down and throws it all away." "So do you mean..." "Yes," she said. "He's actually scared of the success he wants so badly." Chapter 6. By morning, Mystery's sanity had decomposed further. When he wasn't crying on the couches, he was patrolling the house, trying to make sure Kachi and Herbal were apart. If he couldn't find them, he'd call her. Whether she answered the phone or not, the result was the same. Mystery would fly off the handle and destroy whatever was within arm's or leg's reach. He pulled several bookcases to the ground, decimated his pillows, leaving feathers strewn across his room, and threw his cell phone against the wall, snapping the apparatus in half and leaving a deep black dent in the plaster. "Where's Katya?" he'd ask Playboy. "She's shopping for clothes on Melrose." "Where's Herbal?" "He's, sort of with her." And then Mystery's heart would twist, and his face would fall, and his eyes would leak, and his legs would give out from under him, and he'd make some bizarre evolutionary justification for it all. "It's selfish genes," he'd say. "It's the non-existent potential baby punishing me for leaving." "When Herbal returned from shopping on Melrose with Katya, I warned him, 'You're being tooled. She's using you to get back at Mystery.' 'No,' he said. 'It's not true. We have real feelings for each other.' 'Well, can you do me a favor and just try not to see her until Mystery gets better? I'm going to ask her to leave the house for a while.' 'Fine,' he said, with some reluctance. 'But it's not going to be easy.'" Seduction was easy compared to this. Even if people were just programs designed by evolution, as Mystery believed, they were apparently too complicated for any of us to truly understand. All we had figured out were a few simple cause-and-effect relationships. If you lower a woman's self-esteem, she will seek validation from you. If you make a woman jealous, she will become more attracted to you. But beyond attraction and lust, there were deeper feelings that few of us felt and none of us had mastered. And these feelings, for which the heart and the word love were just metaphors, were tearing Project Hollywood, a house already divided, further apart. And so it came to pass that Mystery scared everyone out of the house, and he started talking about killing himself, and I got him a Xanax from Katya, and I put him in my car, and I took him to the Hollywood Mental Health Center, and he tried to run away twice, and he wanted to hit on the therapist, but couldn't. 6 hours later, he left the clinic with a package of Seroquel pills in his hand and another Xanax in his system. I never heard of Seroquel before, so when we returned to the house, I looked at the pamphlet that came with it. "For the treatment of schizophrenia," it read. Mystery took the pamphlet from my hands and looked it over. "They're just sleeping pills," he said. "They'll help me get to sleep." "Right," I told him. "Sleeping pills." Step 10. Blast Last-Minute Resistance. Chapter 1. It was lemonade day at Project Hollywood. At least, that's what Courtney Love had decided. Mystery was recovering, Katya was in New Orleans for 6 weeks, and there were good vibes to be spread. Cigarette hanging from her mouth, dropping ash onto her Betsy Johnson t-shirt, Courtney grabbed a giant mixing bowl from the cabinet. She opened the refrigerator and scanned for liquids, snatching 2 half-gallon cartons of lemonade and a quart of orange juice. She emptied them into the mixing bowl, and when that overflowed, several pots. Then she grabbed a handful of ice cubes from the freezer and dropped them into her brew. Finally, she plunged her black charred fingers into each vessel and stirred. Juice sloshed onto the counter as ashes from the cigarette in her mouth fluttered into the mixing bowl. Stubbing her cigarette out on the yellow tile countertop, she looked around frantically until she noticed an overhead cabinet. She swung the doors open and thrust her hands inside, sticking her fingers into 4 glasses and squeezing them together to pull them out. One by one, she dipped the glasses into the bowl and filled them. Then she grabbed the rest of the glasses, any clean coffee mug she could find, and a Pyrex measuring cup, and sloshed lemonade into all of them. In the living room, Mystery sat cross-legged on a couch, leading his first pickup seminar since returning from the mental health center 3 weeks earlier. He wore a t-shirt and denim overalls. His feet were bare. Patches of unshaven hair dappled his chin, and his eyelids drooped lazily over unfocused eyes. He'd been taking the Seroquel regularly and sleeping out his depression. He was beginning to break through to the other side. "There are three phases to a relationship," he told his students, speaking in a torpor. "There's a beginning, a middle, and an end. And I'm going through the end right now. I'm not going to lie to you. I've cried three times in the last week." His six students glanced at each other, confused. They were there to learn to get laid. But for Mystery, this wasn't just a seminar. It was therapy. He'd been telling them about Katya for 2 hours now. "This is what you're building up to, and it can be difficult," he went on. "My plan for the next girl is to have a fake marriage again. The mistake I made last time was letting Katya and her mother know it was a joke. Next time, I'll have the wedding in the backyard. I'll have an actor be the preacher, and everyone except her and her parents will know we're not really getting married." One of the students, a good-looking man in his 30s with a crew cut and a jaw like a block of cement, raised his hand. "But didn't you just get through telling us how the fake marriage was a disaster last time?" "I was just field testing it," Mystery said. "It's a great routine." Whenever Mystery returned from his depressions, his mental bearings shifted a little. This time, there was an anger lurking beneath the surface, along with a new bitterness toward women. Suddenly, Courtney came careening out of the kitchen. "Who wants lemonade?" The students looked at her dumbstruck. "Here you go," she said, forcing a glass on Mystery and another on cement jaw. "What are you doing here?" she asked. "You're cute." "I'm a self-defense instructor," he said. "Mystery is letting me sit in on the workshop in exchange for lessons in Krav Maga." Courtney shot off to the kitchen and came back with two more glasses of lemonade, then two more, and two more, until there were more glasses than people in the room. "I think we're set on lemonade," Mystery said as she returned with two coffee mugs in her hands. "Where's Herbal?" she asked. "I think he's showering." Courtney dashed to the bathroom and kicked the door. "Herbal, are you there?" She kicked the door again, harder. "I'm showering," he yelled back. "It's important, I'm coming in." She pushed through the door, ran inside, and ripped the shower curtain open. "What's going on?" Herbal asked, panicked. He stood there naked, his hair streaked white with shampoo. "Is the house on fire?" "I made this for you," Courtney said. She thrust a mug of lemonade in each of Herbal's wet hands and dashed away. Herbal stood there silently. Ever since he'd promised to stop talking to Katya, he drifted through the house in a forlorn cloud of silence. Though he was too proud to admit it, his heart ached. He loved her. As Mystery's seminar broke for lunch, Courtney dashed past them and up the stairs to Papa's room, leaving a trail of lemonade drops on the carpet. She burst through the door. Inside, Papa, Sick Boy, Tyler Durden, Playboy, Xanius, and the mini-Papas were working on individual computers. Extra Mask was laying on Papa's unmade bed, reading the Bhagavad Gita. While staying at the house, Extra Mask had gotten bored and started reading Playboy's books on Eastern religion, which had unexpectedly led him down a path of spiritual self-discovery. "Courtney?" Tyler Durden asked as she distributed drinks. "Can you get us on the guest list for Joseph's on Monday?" Courtney picked up the phone, walked into the bathroom with Tyler, and dialed Brent Bolthouse, a promoter who threw the Monday night parties at Joseph's, famed for their tight guest lists and crowds of gorgeous wannabes. "Brent," she said. "My friend Tyler Durden is a professional pickup artist." Tyler waved his hands frantically in a futile attempt to signal Courtney not to talk about it. "He picks up women for a living. It's really cool." Tyler dropped his head into his hands. "Can you put him on the guest list so he can come with some of his pickup artist friends and pick up chicks?" Courtney picked a strip of six wrapped condoms off the edge of the sink and wrapped it around her wrist like a bracelet, then began exploring the bathroom. She poked her head inside the two closets, Papa's infamous guest bedrooms, that were on either side of the toilet. "Let me ask you something," she said as she withdrew from Tyler Durden's closet, which contained a suitcase, a pile of dirty clothes, and a mattress on the floor. "Do you like women?" On the other side of the bathroom's slotted windows, cement jaw dragged a sandbag along the brickwork of the patio. "I wasn't a misogynist when I started this," Tyler replied. "But you get good and you start sleeping with all these women who have boyfriends, and you stop trusting women." "A side effect of sarging is that it can lower one's opinion of the opposite sex. You see too much betrayal, lying, and infidelity. If a woman has been married 3 years or more, you come to learn that she's usually easier to sleep with than a single woman. If a woman has a boyfriend, you learn that you have a better chance of fucking her the night you meet her than getting her to return a phone call later. Women, you eventually realize, are just as bad as men. They're just better at hiding it. I got hurt a lot when I first started picking up, he continued. I'd meet an amazing girl I really liked, and we'd talk all night. She'd say she loved me and was so lucky to have met me. But then I'd fail one shit test, and she'd walk away and wouldn't even talk to me anymore. Everything we'd built up over the last 8 hours would just go down the drain. So it hardened me. There are men in this world who hate women, who do not respect them, who call them bitches and cunts. These are not puas. Puas don't hate women. They fear them. Simply by defining oneself as a pua, a title earned solely by the responses of women, one becomes doomed to derive his entire self-esteem and identity from the attention of the opposite sex, not unlike a comedian's relationship to audience members. If they don't laugh, you're not funny. So, as self-esteem defense mechanisms, some puas developed misogynist tendencies in the process of learning. Sarging could be hazardous to the soul. Outside the window, Symmetra held a sandbag as Mystery flailed at it with long, limp punches. Harder, he yelled at Mystery. I want to see more aggression. Chapter 2 I left the house for an hour to get some groceries. Only an hour. And when I returned, there was a red Porsche spewing smoke in the driveway, a 13-year-old girl in the living room, and two pissed-off, bleached blondes smoking on the patio. What the hell's going on? I asked as I kicked the door shut behind me. This is Marie, Mystery said. The cleaning lady's daughter? We were never able to hold on to a maid. The task of cleaning a week's accumulation of dishes, overflowing trash cans, fast food debris, spilt alcohol, and cigarette butts from a dozen guys and countless party girls was more than most could handle. Consequently, Project Hollywood tended to stew in its own filth for a month or more between maids. The latest had set a record. 2 consecutive weeks. The cleaning lady left the house for supplies, so I'm watching her daughter. Mystery took a few strides closer to me. She reminds me of my nieces. It was nice to see Mystery acting somewhat normal again. An adolescent in the house was a calming influence on him. As for the Porsche, Courtney had it brought to the house so that Mystery could drive her to rehearsal. But Mystery had taken the car for a test run and found out the hard way that he couldn't rely on his magical intuition to teach him how to drive a stick shift. And who are they? I asked, pointing to the blondes. They're in Courtney's band. I went out to the patio and introduced myself. I'm Sam, said a slightly tomboyish girl with a Queens accent. I play drums with Courtney. We've met before, I told her. We've met before too, sneered the other girl. Her Long Island accent was so sharp that it startled me. She was 2 inches taller than me, her hair was pushed straight back over her head like a horse's mane, and her large brown eyes were framed with thick black mascara that reminded me of masturbating as a teenager to Susanna Hoffs in the Bangles video for Walk Like an Egyptian. This girl was the epitome of rock and roll. Yeah, I stammered. I saw you briefly at the Tonight Show. Before that, at that party at the Argyle Hotel where you were talking to those twins the whole night. Oh, the porcelain twins. I couldn't imagine having forgotten her. She was so charismatic. Good posture is one of the things I find most attractive about a woman, and this girl's posture screamed confidence. It also screamed, don't fuck with me. I went back inside and asked Mystery about her. That's Lisa, Courtney's guitarist, he said. She's a total bitch. The girls were visiting because Courtney had planned to tape an acoustic performance at her house for a British television program. But Courtney was nowhere to be found, and Sam and Lisa were fuming. I sat down to pacify her bandmates. I felt so small next to them. I picked up a CD case that belonged to Lisa and thumbed through the discs. I was impressed. She had music by Cesaria Evora, a diva from the Cape Verde Islands. Her mournful songs, backed by a lilting Latin rhythm, are perhaps the best makeout music on the planet. As soon as I saw that CD, I knew I'd met someone I wanted to get to know better. Somewhere in the back of my mind, I dimly recalled what enabled me to meet and interact with women before I'd discovered the seduction community. Commonalities. Simply finding out that you have a passion for something another person also likes and respects is enough to fire that strange emotion we like to call chemistry. Scientists studying pheromones claim that when two people discover they have things in common, pheromones are released and attraction begins. Moments later, Mystery joined us. He dropped into a chair and sat there for a moment, a vortex of neediness, sucking up any stray pheromones Lisa and I had managed to release. "I called Katya today," he said, "and we talked for a while. I still love that girl." He looked at Sam and Lisa, as if trying to select a target. "Do they know about all the drama with Katya?" he asked. The girls rolled their eyes. They had their own drama to deal with. "Well," I excused myself, "I'm gonna grab a burrito at Paquito Mas. Nice meeting you, again." I had to get away from there. I didn't want to be associated with the madness, even if I was part of it. By the time I got back to the house, the TV producers from Britain had arrived, along with a prospective manager for Courtney and a stylist. "I can't work with her anymore," the stylist said when it became clear that Courtney wouldn't be showing up in time for the shoot. "Ever since she's been doing drugs, she's become a nightmare to deal with." We hadn't seen any evidence of drugs in the house, but considering Courtney's erratic behavior, perhaps Project Hollywood hadn't kept her away from them as she had hoped. I felt bad for her. She was allowing the problems of the house to distract her from the real-life issues she should have been dealing with. Perhaps we all were. I awoke that night to see Courtney standing at the foot of my bed with a Prada shoe in her hand. "Let's redecorate the house," she said excitedly. "This will be our hammer." I looked at the clock. It was 2:20 a.m. "Do you have any nails or tacks?" she asked. Without waiting for an answer, she ran downstairs and returned with a box of nails, a framed painting from my wall, a throw pillow for my bed, and a smashed pink box that looked like an old Valentine's Day present. "This is the heart-shaped box," she said. "I want you to have it." She picked up my guitar, sat on the edge of my bed, and played my favorite country song, "Long Black Veil." "I'm going to a friend's party tomorrow night at Forbidden City," she said, dropping the guitar to the floor. "I want you to come too. It'll be good for us to get out of the house together." "I'll tell you what," I replied. "I'll meet you there." I knew how long she could take to get ready. "Okay, I'll go with Lisa." "Speaking of Lisa," I said, "there were a bunch of people waiting for you here today, and you were nowhere to be found. I think they're pretty upset." Her face clouded, her lips puckered, and tears dripped from her eyes. "I'm gonna get help," she said. "I promise." Chapter 3. I wore a white blazer over a black shirt emblazoned with a scrolling bank of LCD lights that could be programmed with a message. I input the words, "Kill me." I hadn't been out sarging in at least a month and wanted the attention. My expectations for Courtney showing up to Forbidden City were low, so I brought Herbal along as a wing. We had recently flown to Houston together to pick up the Project Hollywood limousine, a 1998 10-passenger stretch Cadillac Herbal had found on eBay. Flush with the success of that scheme, Herbal had, against our better judgment, put down a deposit to buy a wallaby at an exotic pets website. On the way to the party, we argued about the practicality and humanity of having a baby marsupial in the house. "They make the best pets," he insisted. "They're like house-trained kangaroos. They sleep with you, they bathe with you, and you can take them for walks by holding their tail." The last thing we needed was a wallaby in the mix at Project Hollywood. The only bright side to the fiasco was that it made for a great opener. We ran around the party, asking everyone for their opinion on having wallabies as pets. Between the opener and my shirt, within half an hour we were surrounded by women. It felt good to flex our skills again. We'd been so absorbed by the drama of the house that we had forgotten the reason we'd moved there in the first place. As a tall, stoop-shouldered girl who claimed to be a model pawed at my shirt, I saw a mane of bleached blonde hair sticking up out of the crowd. I looked closer. Though she was on the other side of the room, she seemed aglow. Her jaw was set, her face was chiseled, her eyes smoldered beneath a half-shell of heavy blue eyeshadow. It was Courtney's guitarist, Lisa. Next to her, all the wannabe models and actresses I had been talking to seemed insignificant. She dwarfed them with her style and poise. I excused myself and ran up to her. "Where's Courtney?" I asked. "She was taking too long to get ready, so I came alone. I respect a person who isn't afraid to show up at a party alone." "I am the party," she said, without blinking or smiling. I think she was serious. For the entire night, Lisa and I sat side by side in a chair, the most peacocked couple in the room. The party seemed to come to us, as if we exerted some sort of gravitational pull together. The couches around us soon filled with models, comedians, reality TV has-beens, and Dennis Rodman. When the various women I had talked to during the night came by to flirt, Lisa and I drew on their arms with pens, or fed them shots of hypnotic, or gave them intelligence tests that they usually failed. This is what the poo was called, creating an Our World conspiracy. We were in our own little bubble, where we were king and queen, and everyone else was our plaything for the night. When a phalanx of paparazzi started taking pictures of Dennis Rodman, who was standing nearby, I looked at Lisa's face, illuminated by the flashbulbs. And out of nowhere, my heart awoke from its torpor and body checked my chest. When the party broke up, Lisa put her arm around me and asked, "Will you take me home? I'm too drunk to drive." My heart slammed again, and then settled into a fast, arrhythmic throb. She may have been too drunk to drive, but I was too nervous to drive. Without waiting for a response, she dropped the keys to her Mercedes into my hand. I called to Herbal and asked him to drive my car home. "I can't believe it," I told him. "It's on." But it wasn't on. I drove Lisa back to her place. I recognized the building. It was directly across the street from the Hollywood Mental Health Center, where I had taken Mystery. When we arrived, she went to the bathroom. I lay down on her bed and tried to look relaxed. Lisa padded out of the bathroom, looked at me, and then said, with a withering look, "Don't think anything's going to happen between us." "Damn it," I thought, "I'm style. You have to love me. I'm an M-Pua." She changed and we drove to my house to look for Courtney. All we found there, however, was Tyler Durden leading 10 men in the living room through some sort of exercise that involved running around the couches, yelling loudly, and giving each other high fives. Tyler had been experimenting lately with a technique of physically pumping up his students' mood for a night out meeting women. He believed that whether or not they actually performed better, the shot of adrenaline and camaraderie would make them think they had fun, and thus give Real Social Dynamics good reviews in the seduction news groups. It was becoming a competitive industry. Courtney seemed to have disappeared again. Maybe she'd been serious the other night and really was getting help, or maybe she was off getting into more trouble. I took Lisa up to my room, lit some candles, put Cesaria Evora in the CD player, and went to my closet. "Let's have some fun," I told her. I pulled out a garbage bag full of old Halloween costumes. Masks, wigs, hats. We tried them all on, taking photos with my digital camera. I was going to attempt the digital photo routine. We took a photo smiling, then serious. For the third photo, the romantic pose, we gazed at each other. Her eyes seemed so happy. Behind that tough exterior was vulnerability and tenderness. I held her eye contact and moved toward her for the kiss, holding the camera in front of us to capture it. "I'm not kissing you," she barked. The words scalded my face like hot coffee. There was no girl I couldn't kiss within half an hour of meeting her. What was her problem? I froze her out and tried again. Nothing. It is in these moments that, as a Pua, you start to question the work you've done on yourself. You begin to worry that maybe she sees the real you, the one that existed before the silly nickname, the one who wrote poems about this exact situation in high school. I delivered a moving, impassioned performance of the evolution phase shift routine. Somewhere in the distance, I heard 1,000 Puas applauding. "I'm not biting you," she said. I wasn't through. I told her the most beautiful love story ever written. On Meeting the 100% Perfect Girl, One Beautiful April Morning by Haruki Murakami. It is about a man and a woman who are soulmates. But when they doubt their connection for a moment and decide not to act on it, they lose each other forever. She was ice cold. I tried a hardcore freeze out. I blew out the candles, stopped the music, turned on the lights, and checked my email. She climbed into my bed, curled up under the covers, and went to sleep. Finally, I joined her, and we slept on opposite sides of the bed. I still had one trick left, going caveman. In the morning, without a word, I started massaging her leg, working my hand slowly up her thigh. If I could just turn her on physically, her logic would disengage, and she would no doubt submit. My intention wasn't to use Lisa for sex. I knew I wanted to see her again, no matter what happened. I just wanted to get the whole sex thing over with so that we could be normal together. She wouldn't be trying to keep anything from me. I wouldn't be trying to get something. I always hated the idea that sex is something a woman gives and a man takes. It's something that should be shared. But Lisa wasn't sharing. As I began to rub the warm crease where her thigh met her pelvis, her voice rang shrill in the air like an alarm clock. "What are you doing?" She smacked my hand away. We had breakfast together, and lunch, and dinner. We talked about Courtney, and the Puas, and my writing, and her music, and our lives, and all kinds of other things that I can't remember, but must have been fascinating, because hours passed in the blink of an eye. She was my age. She liked all the same bands I did. She said something intelligent every time she opened her mouth. She laughed at my jokes that were funny, and made fun of the ones that weren't. She spent another night with me. Nothing happened. I had met my match. Chapter 4. I told Mystery about my frustration with Lisa as we sat in the hot tub one night. I'd turned to him so often in the past for advice on women, and he'd rarely steered me wrong. Though relationship management was clearly not his forte, he was flawless when it came to blasting through last-minute resistance. "Start stroking yourself," he said. "Now, here?" "No, next time you're in bed together, just take your cock out and start stroking it." "Then what?" "Then you take her hand and put it on your balls, and she'll start giving you a hand job." "Are you serious?" "Yes." "Then put your finger on your dick and put a little pre-cum on it, and put your finger in her mouth." "No way. This is like that bad joke advice you see in movies, where the friend does it and the girl freaks out, and the guy who gave the advice goes, 'I thought you knew I was kidding.' I'm totally serious. You've practically had sex after that." 3 days later, after the bars closed at 2 a.m., Lisa dropped by my house with Sam, Courtney's drummer. She was wasted. We climbed into bed and babbled to each other for hours. "I don't know what my problem is," she slurred. "I never want to leave your room. I could just listen to you talk forever." She rolled toward me. "Forget I said that," she snapped. "I didn't mean it. Alcohol is like a truth serum." Now was my chance. Mystery's words ran through my head, and I considered the pros and cons of stroking myself and placing her hand on me. I couldn't do it. Not because I was scared, but because there was no way it was going to work. Lisa would have laughed in my face and said something cutting like, "You might as well touch yourself, because I'm certainly not about to." Then she would have told all her friends about the cheesy guy who started rubbing his dick in front of her. Mystery wasn't always right. So we spent another platonic night together. It was driving me crazy. I knew she liked me, yet she wouldn't get intimate. I was teetering on the border of being put in LJBF zone, let's just be friends. Maybe I just wasn't her type. I imagined her with tattooed, muscle-bound, leather-jacketed Danzig types, not scrawny metrosexual guys who had to take pickup workshops. She was killing me. For the first time since I'd learned the word one-itis, I had it, and I knew that I was doomed. No one ever gets his one-itis. He gets too clingy and needy and blows it. And sure enough, I blew it. The next night, Lisa left town to play a festival in Atlanta with Courtney. She called 3 times while she was gone. "Are you free for dinner when I get back?" she asked. "I don't know," I told her. "Depends on whether you can behave yourself or not." "Fine then," she said. "If you're going to be like that, I don't need to go." I was just trying to tease her and bust her balls like David D'Angelo had taught me. And in doing so, I had destroyed the moment. I sounded like an asshole. "Don't be a troublemaker," I said. It was time to be straightforward. "I want to see you when you're back. I'm leaving town for 2 weeks, so it'll be our last chance to hang out." In the background, I could hear Sam speaking. "You're talking to him like he's your boyfriend," she told Lisa. "Maybe I want him to be my boyfriend," Lisa said to her. So I hadn't been LJBF'd. I couldn't wait for her to come back. I wanted her to be my girlfriend, too. I spent the entire day of Lisa's return plotting the perfect seduction. I would pick her up from the airport in the limo. Herbal would drive, and I would wait for her in the back seat. Then I'd take her to the whiskey bar at the Sunset Marquee Hotel, walking distance from Project Hollywood. Because women don't respect guys who pay for them, but at the same time are turned off by guys who are cheap, I went to the whiskey bar ahead of time, gave the manager $100, and told him to make sure whatever we ordered was on the house. Afterward, I planned to take her home. On my computer, I wrote down all the patterns and routines I would use to combat any LMR, last-minute resistance. Now that I knew she liked me, I had the confidence to push this thing to the end. If she still resisted, then she clearly had intimacy issues, and I'd have to be the one to LJBF her. Her flight was scheduled to arrive at 6:30 p.m. As Erbil drove the limo past the Delta terminal, looking for her, I mixed cosmopolitans at the bar in the back of the car. When the flight arrived, however, she wasn't on it. I was confused, but not disappointed, yet. Apua must be willing to change or abandon any plan when confronted with the chaos and chance of reality. So Erbil drove me home, and I left a message for Lisa. When she didn't call back, I left another message and then waited all night in vain to hear from her. At 5 o'clock that morning, I was awakened by my cell phone ringing. "Sorry to wake you up, but I needed to talk to someone." The voice on the other end was a man's. The accent was Australian. It was Sweater from Mystery's First Workshop. Since I'd last talked to Sweater, he had left the community and gotten married. I thought about him often. Every time someone asked if guys in the community were learning these skills just to have sex with as many women as possible, I pointed to Sweater as an example of someone who had gotten into the game for all the right reasons. "I tried to kill myself today," he said. "What happened?" "My wife is expecting our first baby in 10 days, and I'm miserable. I do everything for her, but it's not enough. She's driven me away from my friends. My business partner is leaving me. She spends all my money, and all she does is complain." He paused to choke back his tears. "And now that she's having this baby, I'm trapped." "But you were in love with her. How can she just change?" "No, the problem is that I changed. It was too hard to be that person who Mystery and David D'Angelo taught us to be. That person wasn't a good guy, and that's not the kind of person I wanted to be. I like doing nice things for people. So I got her whatever she wanted. I sent her flowers 3 times a week. I tried it her way, but it didn't work." I'd never heard grown men cry as much as I had in the last 2 years. "I sat in the garage today with the motor running and the windows up." He continued, "I haven't thought of suicide since 86, but I just got to the point where I was like, fuck. I didn't see any purpose in living." Sweater didn't need to be saved. He just wanted someone to talk to. He had pretended to be someone he wasn't, just to seduce a woman, and now he was suffering the consequences. "When I first got in the community, I wrote down everything I wanted," he said. "And now I'm living the life I imagined. I have the money, the big house, and the beautiful girl. But I wasn't specific enough about the beautiful girl. I never wrote that she had to treat me with respect and kindness." Later that morning, Courtney returned to the house. I could hear her rearranging furniture in the living room. "Did the rest of the band get back from Atlanta yet?" I asked her, trying to sound casual. "Yeah, they came home on an earlier flight." I turned away quickly. I knew if I said anything in response, my voice would betray my disappointment. Courtney threw a bundle of sage on the coffee table. "Let's clear the air in here," she said. Then she skipped off to the kitchen, explaining, "We need some rice for good fortune." Unable to locate any rice, she returned with a package of jambalaya mix and a bowl of water. She poured the jambalaya mix into the water, planted the sage in the middle of it, and then ran to her room. She emerged carrying a blue and white checked flannel shirt. "This will work," she said. "It's one of Kurt's shirts. I only have 3 left. She carefully arranged the shirt underneath the table, safe from harm, so that it could bring good energy to the house. After lighting the sage, she sat Mystery, Erbil, and me down next to her makeshift altar, and we joined hands. Her grip was bone-crushing. "Thank you, God, for this day and all that you have given us," she prayed. "We ask that you clear the energy of this house of all evil. Please bring peace and harmony and friendship under this roof. And help me win my court case in New York and help clear up all my other problems. I will work with you, God. I really will. Give me strength. Amen." The next day, a driver came and whisked Courtney to the airport to go to New York. There, her prayers for herself would eventually be answered, but the atmosphere in the house would only grow darker in her absence. Courtney, it soon became clear, wasn't the cause of any problems. She had merely been the symptom of something much larger that was eating away at our lives. Chapter 5. That afternoon, Lisa left me a short voicemail. "Hi, it's Lisa. I'm back. We took an earlier flight. That was it. No apology, no tenderness, no mention of the plan she had completely blown off. I called her back, but she didn't answer. I'm leaving town in a few hours to go to Miami with Vision, I told her voicemail. I would really love to talk to you before I leave. It was an AFC message, and I never heard back from her. I checked my voicemail every day while I was away. Nothing. I didn't stalk women, like other guys in the community. If she were interested, she would have called. I'd been blown off, and by the first woman I had felt something for in a while. I figured she'd probably started dating someone else, someone who had been able to break through her LMR. First I was angry at her, then I was angry at myself, and then I was just sad. The Puas had always advised that the best way to get over a one-itis is to fuck a dozen other girls. So I went on a rampage. I didn't want to end up like Sweater anyway. I had almost let myself get caught. I went sergeant every night in Miami, with more fire, drive, and success than I'd ever had. I've never been a fan of one-night stands. Once you've gotten that close to someone, why throw it away afterward? I'm more a fan of 10-night stands. 10 nights of great sex, each one getting steamier, wilder, and more experimental as two people grow more comfortable together and learn what turns each other on. So after I slept with each woman, I mixed and matched them like jelly beans. It was my reality. The girls I was most looking forward to getting together were Jessica, a tattoo-covered 21-year-old I'd slept with a few times in Los Angeles, and another Jessica, whom I'd met at Crowbar. She was also 21, but the exact opposite of Jessica 1. She was innocent-looking, with a touch of baby fat. I knew they both liked porn, so I thought things might get interesting. After a drink at the hotel bar, I brought them up to my room for a rune reading, and then left them alone for a few minutes to get acquainted. When I returned, I showed them home movies on my laptop, and then began the trusty dual induction massage. It was all just a routine now, like the jealous girlfriend opener or the best friends test, and it worked just as consistently. Once the girls' lips touched, they transformed from strangers to lovers. It shocked me every time to see two women get intimate so quickly in such an unusual situation. The night was as nasty as I'd anticipated. We tried every position we could twist into, some more successfully than others. When Jessica asked me to come in her mouth, I obliged. She spit it into Jessica 2's mouth, and they started making out passionately. It was the sexiest moment of my entire life. But afterward, I felt empty and alone. I didn't care about them. All I really had was a memory and a story. Every girl in my life could disappear and never call me again, and I wouldn't have cared. All the 10-night stands and threesomes in the world wouldn't be enough to get me over my one-itis. The Puas were wrong. Chapter 6. While I was in Miami, Katya returned. I dreaded the day and the terror it would unleash in the house, but Mystery was looking forward to it like a birthday. He had it all planned out. Because I was away, I've reconstructed the story of the disaster that ensued from the accounts of those involved. Project Hollywood had reached a new nadir. Katya. Mystery called me every other day while I was in New Orleans, trying to sweet-talk me. He said, I have this beautiful 19-year-old girl named Jen that you'll love. I asked him if he was giving her to me. He said, no, we're sharing. Mystery. The idea wasn't for Katya to be my girlfriend again, but to be a play toy for Jen and me. My plan was to pick her up from the airport in the limo, grab some food at the farmer's market, and then go back to the house and do the dual induction massage. Herbal. I ignored Katya for almost the entire month and a half she was gone, even though she kept sending me text messages. Mystery spent the whole time bragging about how he was going to get a threesome with her, which was like a knife being twisted in my heart. But I sucked it up and listened. I told Mystery repeatedly, just to ignore her and not let her back in the house to avoid problems. But he wouldn't do it. Katya. I flew into Los Angeles the day before, which Mystery doesn't know, to rent a studio apartment and hang out with some friends from New Orleans. I stayed in a hotel and called Herbal to talk, because at that point I really wanted to start dating him. The next morning, I just showed up at the house and told Mystery my plane got in early, so I took a taxi. Herbal. When I came home from doing errands and saw Katya's suitcases, I went into my room to mind my own business. However, Mystery and Katya came in and started talking to me. Then we went to Mystery's bathroom, and Katya painted our nails. She disappeared into Mystery's walk-in closet to get a sweater. Then Mystery went in. After 5 minutes, they were still in the closet. Mystery. She called me into the closet and said, I want to date Herbal. I don't think she said it because she truly wanted to be with him. She just said it to bug me. I was being too kissy-kissy with Jen, and I believe that triggered jealousy in her. So I called Herbal into the closet and told Katya, why don't you say it to him? Herbal. That night, we went on a double date. It was pretty normal at first, and I guess I was naive, but I really thought everything would be fine. Mystery. Jen and Katya ended up making out with each other in a limo that night. I have pictures of them sucking each other's tits in a phone booth at the Santa Monica Pier, but it was getting complex. I felt that Katya was trying to steal Jen from me and share her with Herbal. So I got pissed at Katya in the car, and we had a blow-up. Jen saw this and said, just take me home. After that, she asked me never to call her again. Mystery, as posted in Mystery's Lounge. Be on the lookout for Herbal, Katya, and Jen. If anyone sees Herbal, easy to spot as he frequently peacocks, or his girlfriend Katya, a bi Russian 9.5, easy to spot, with Jen, a 19-year-old Mexican 9.5, also easy to spot, please call Mystery, so I may admit